The Firehouse Follies are made possible by Fiddle and Joe Enterprises with minor assistance from WFHB Community Radio.
Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard, please report to surgery. Dr. Hunt, please report to mixed gender restroom exit, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is WFHB Ace News reporter Fawn Sanity, live from a critical care unit of an unnamed hospital here in Bloomington, where I'm about to have an exclusive interview with Myron T. Hoopengrupper. You may remember Mr. Hoopengrupper as the man who was trampled during a rush on a retail store on Black Friday and had been unconscious ever since. Well, he's regained his consciousness and is asking for a news conference with moi, and my editor's been on me to do some kind of touchy-feely human interest story, so here I am. Despite the fact that there's real news happening somewhere, even as I speak.
Miss Sanity, you can come in now, but Mr. Hoopengrupper is not out of danger yet. So please, please, keep your interview brief.
No problem. My editor isn't giving me much time for this thing anyway. Mr. Hoopengrupper?
No, no, I'm his lawyer. Mr. Hoopengrupper's the one in bed, in traction.
Silly me. But what does he need with a lawyer?
Well, we'll be filing lawsuits on behalf of Mr. Hoopengrupper. My law firm should make out pretty well with this, especially if he doesn't regain the use of his knees.
Yeah, we'll talk later, lawyer man. So Mr. Hoopengrupper, can you tell us just what happened? What were you, a man, doing in a combat zone on Black Friday, and how did you come to be injured so severely?
Well, I was worried sick that I might not be able to buy any of Fiddle and Joe's non-action figures for my granddaughter, Starlina.
That'd be Starlina Hoopengrupper?
No.
No?
Starlina Sternkowski. It's my daughter's child. My son's child's Horatio, anyway. I thought I should get a bunch of them things before they was all gone.
Almost nobody buys those things. Whatever made you think they were going to be gone?
Why, Bill and Joe ran ahead, saying Donald Trump would force them off the market and throw Joe in the clink so he couldn't sell any more of them. Didn't you see that ad?
No, I don't read Girls of the Night. But why would our president-elect pull them off the market? I mean, he's always seemed such a reasonable guy.
Well, I hear Trump's coming out with his own line of non-action figures. Folks in the RNC, I hear. Remember back in 2008 and 12, Obama took away all our guns? Mm-hmm. Well, I bought a couple of dozen new assault rifles just to be safe then, and I figured I better stock up on these here non-action figures.
Uh-huh, I see.
Well, I never counted on them women, though. Man, they were nasty. They run right over me and then stomped on me. Last thing I remember was some lady hit me over the head with a non-action figure. She looked like Ivanka Trump, and she had a Mike Pence non-action figure in her hands.
Yes, and the Mike Pence figures are the ones with the extra hard heads.
Mr. Hoopengrupper, I have to say that that's about the most ridiculous story I have ever heard. And you, Mr. Lawyer Man, just who are you planning to sue here?
Why, we'll sue Fiddle and Joe, for starters, and then the Trump campaign. It's morning in America again. And a new age of litigation has dawned. My law firm and I plan to cash in while we can.
So you're going to sue on behalf of some idiot.
Wait a minute, I resemble that remark.
As I was saying, some idiot who walked into a combat zone without any idea of what he was doing. And just what are your charges going to be?
Well, I don't know that yet.
You don't know, huh? Well, what do you know, wise guy?
Well, I know one thing, but it's a secret.
What is it?
Well, you've been so mean, I don't think I'll tell you.
You tell me now, or you'll be joining your client in traction.
Let me go. Well, all right, if you put it like that. Live from the Weikart Dutton Deckard Martini Eiler Auditorium, it's the Firehouse Follies!
afternoon and welcome to 200 Years of Hoosierness, the Firehouse Follies Winter 2016 Radio Variety Show Extravaganza, coming to you live from the Ivy Tech Waldron Roberts Fickle Kadish Salvaggi Auditorium in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana. We're pleased to be joined by singer and songwriter R.B. Morris, who doubles as the Poet Laureate of Knoxville, Tennessee. That's right. And by Indiana University Professor Emeritus Scott Russell Sanders. Along with the Firehouse Rounders and Sarah Flint with guest gospel guy Maurice Murphy. And, of course, we'll be featuring the Unusual Suspects radio acting troupe with Master Tony Brewer on sound effects. Today's show is made possible by Ivy Tech Community College. Let's get going with Sarah Flint, Maurice Murphy, and the Rounders, backed by the Unusual Suspects, with a song that is even more relevant than usual these days.
I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom.
Woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom.
I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. Hallelujah.
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 Singing and praying with my mind stayed on freedom. Singing and praying with my mind stayed on freedom. Singing and praying with my mind stayed on freedom. Hallelujah.
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 With my mind
stayed on freedom.
Hallelujah.
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 You know there ain't no harm to keep your mind. Hey,
stay on freedom.
There ain't no harm to keep your mind.
Ladies and gentlemen, they'll be back later in the show, but first, let's get the nasty part of the show out of the way. Here are two guys who ought to feel really lucky that they did wake up this morning. Richard Fish and Colonel Mike Kelsey.
Ah, thank you, Dan. I think. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Colonel Kelsey, it's good to see you here today.
It has been a tough month or so we've had. We've lost so many good musicians, I can't even begin to list them.
Yes, and then there was the election.
Well, the trouble with political jokes, Richard, is that sometimes they get elected. On the bright side, I hear that WFHB will no longer need a PC compliance officer.
Hold your horses, mister! You need to be fact-checked! No matter what else may happen, WFHB will stay WFHB! Watch your tongue or I'll yank it out!
And I was so looking forward to calling Fiddlin' Joe a dumb redneck.
Personal foul!
But, moving right along...
Yes. I hear we have another great show lined up tonight.
Well, that we do. Indiana turned 200 years old this year, Richard.
Yes, and you've seen all 200 of them, I imagine.
Oh, now, Richard, I know that you don't really need to be jealous of me just because I'm a native Hoosier and you're not.
Oh, yeah? Well, listen, I chose to move to Indiana. That takes more guts than just being born here. I mean, come on. And by the way, I've always wondered, what does that word Hoosier actually mean?
I thought you'd never ask.
Well, I had to. It's right here in the script.
And later on in the script, we will explain everything.
I think I'm relieved. But how about the rest of the show?
Well, we're down to one gospel girl, Sarah Flint.
Mm-hmm.
But she has adequate backup.
Yes.
And we also... More than adequate backup. We also have the Rounders. We've got an Indiana treasure, Arthur Scott Russell Sanders, who will read from his work. And from Knoxville, Tennessee, we're being joined by Mr. R.B. Morris for an encore performance.
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed. Knoxville, huh? Knoxville. I've heard of Nashville, Tennessee, and Memphis, Tennessee. But Knoxville?
Knoxville's right out there in East Tennessee. And though some people may not know it, Knoxville's been an important part of American culture for many years.
Really? Well, I don't know very much about Knoxville, Colonel Kelsey.
One thing I can tell you, Richard, it's a tough town for poets.
It is, huh? Well, how tough?
Thank you. R.B. is best known as a songwriter and a singer, but he's also the poet laureate of Knoxville, Tennessee. Mr. Selvaggi, tell the people just how tough it is to be a Knoxville poet.
Well, our guest today, Mr. R.B. Morris, is the poet laureate of Knoxville, Tennessee. Now, many of you may not realize that this is not an honor that is simply bestowed on a person based on his body of work. Indeed, R.B. had to win his title fair and square in a series of poetry slams. So this is an honor which is really quite giddy. He's the meanest poet in the whole darn city. And for those of you who might not know it, here's how he got to be the top poet.
All right, all right, all right. Poetry fans, all right, poetry fans, please get quiet. We can't have a slam in the middle of a riot. There are two poets ready to go toe-to-toe, and here's some stuff you all should know. On my right, at 160 pounds, is R.B. Morris with some really great sounds. He's come up through the ranks at a dizzying pace and left a trail of poets flat on their face. So put your throats together in a mighty chorus and welcome tonight Mr. R.B. Morris!
R.B. Morris. He's the poet for me.
He can rhyme the bark right off a tree.
R.B. Morris is who I am, and I'm gonna win this poetry slam. There ain't nobody who can rhyme like me. I can rhyme the bark right off a tree.
And on my left, this precocious gal, a fantastic poet, and her name is Sal. So cough up a healthy Knoxville cheer for this wonderful lady a-standing right here.
In the world of poets, I prefer the females.
Especially the ones who write good emails.
I'm Knoxville's best in the poem game, and I'm a-gonna cover RB in shame. By the end of this slam, he'll be on the floor with me carrying the prize right out the door.
Now, RB and Sal, you best know the rules, because making rhymes not a game for fools. When I, the topic, do relate, you make your verse and don't be late. The judges are in the audience sitting, and they'll give their votes to the ones most fitting. And if the game is rigged, I hear you shout, we'll open the door and pitch your lying rear end out. We run a clean game. You'd best do the same.
The votes of the judges I'll accept freely.
And so will I if they vote for me.
Now that that's cleared up, we can start the slam. The first topic is love. And you start, ma'am.
Love. In the world of love, I appear to be hexed. And for the reason, that has me perplexed. When I meet a new boy that I want for mine, he always breaks my heart in two. Happens every time. My heart, it seems, will always be broken. And love to me is just a word unspoken. That's love, Dove.
Yeah, all righty. And now we'll hear from Mr. R.B. Morris and hope that his rhyme will not bore us.
Love is something we're all looking for, but you cannot buy it at the dollar store. If love's on sale, check that expiration date, 'cause you might have got there just a little too late. True love's a bargain at any price, and it can make your heart feel very nice. That's my take on love today. And when the sun shines, you best make some hay.
So, two poems on love we've heard. Tell us, judges, what's the word?
Well, both our poets have something to say, but Sal's pessimism seems to get in her way of expressing just what's on her mind. So we judges for R.B. Morris do find.
So, it's one for him and zip for her, but the level is high, oh, that's for sure. To poem two, we now proceed. We'll start with R.B., who will now read a poem on beauty. R.B., do your duty.
The topic is beauty, you did declare, and booty is beauty, some folks will swear. But beauty itself is no deeper than skin, and it really don't matter if you're fat or thin. I don't much care if a gal's good looking, long as she has money and is good at cooking. That's my take on beauty, if you please. It's enough to make a chicken sneeze.
Oh, yeah, dig.
Well, RB's view of beauty is a little bit cynical. Maybe our gal Sal can be more clinical.
Well, beauty's something I can appreciate, although the ugly I cannot hate. Even though a guy might look like a troll, beauty is something he can have in his soul. If his soul shines forth, then he will glow and be bathed in beauty, don't you know? So there's my thoughts on beauty, cutie.
Well, beauty's been discussed by each of these two. And judges, now it's up to you.
Beauty is a tough thing to define, and R.B. didn't really pay it much mind. Sal gets the vote for the second poem, and it's time to take this poetry slam home. Okay, master of ceremonies, a brand new topic, if you'll please.
Mm-hmm. We have a tie, and no leads are forming. And topic three is global warming. Sal's got the nod to start round three, so step right up and let your thoughts flow free.
Well, global warming is just another big hoax, another one of the scientists' jokes. They say it's getting hotter, but we know that's not true. The snow fell in Knoxville, and up the traffic did screw. So global warming, as an issue, is hot, but a poem topic, it definitely is not. On global warming, that's all I can say. So I guess this will be my last poem of the day.
Well, Sal didn't much like topic three. But R.B. Morris, what about thee?
When I look into my lover's eyes, I can feel the warmth of her soulful sighs. Like our globe, her warmth is oozing. Well, maybe that's just too much boozing. Global warming is not so fine, but my baby's warmth, that's mine, all mine. So global warming might make us worry, but when my baby's warming, I must hurry. Home, that is, to take care of biz.
Oh, solid,
Okay, judges, it's in your hands. Of which of these two are you the fans?
Well, we find that Sal done lost her muse, and so for RB we all do choose. He's Knoxville's laureate, there is no doubting, and now it's all over, except for the shouting.
By the power invested in me, I shout, proclaim, and decree for our RB a black belt in poetry.
Wow-wee!
He's the bestest poet in East Tennessee, and he can rhyme the bark right off a tree.
So friends and neighbors, I tell you, hark. If you see some trees without their bark, it was just RB making rhymes for a lark.
RB, RB, bones for you and bones for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. R.B. Morris.
I'm just an old copper penny by the side of the road. Nobody wants me, I've no one to hold. But everyone sees me, they walk on by just like I ain't worth a dime. But I'm heads up and happy, I'm ready to roll. I know I'm not silver, I know I'm not gold. But I'm good luck to whoever holds an old copper penny like me. I've seen your big deals, and I've watched some fold. Slid through some cracks and I fell through some holes. But count on me to have a good time. Just brush off the dust and you'll see me shine. Cause I'm heads up, I'm happy, I'm ready to roll. I know I'm not silver, I know I'm not gold. But I'm good luck to whoever holds an old copper penny like me. I'm looking for someone who's looking for me, someone to save me, who will that be? Just give me the chance and watch what I do. Next time you see me, I'll be flipping for you. Cause I'm heads up, I'm happy, I'm ready to roll. I know I'm not silver, I know I'm not gold. But I'm good luck to whoever holds an old copper penny like me. I said an old copper penny like me. I said an old copper penny like me. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now here's a song. It's getting near the holidays, and here's one I made up when I was driving through the night, going from one state to another and heading back to my hometown, Knoxville. Tail light lights on the highway, going home for the holiday, and driving through this winter night, I should be there by morning light. Spend a few days in my hometown, see some old friends and make the rounds. And if I see her, that's okay. Just say hello, happy holidays. I'm dreaming while I drive, I'm dreaming back to another time. We've all lived so many lives, I'm dreaming while I drive. I pull over to a night cafe, cup of coffee and I'm on my way. Snow starts falling, the roads are clear, slow and steady, that'll get me there. Christmas Day is long ago, I remember the falling snow. Children sang those old melodies, the world was white and red and green. Dreaming while I drive, the time. We've all lived so many lives, I'm dreaming while I drive. Changed with time, they got wider and more white lines, and I guess I've changed at least that much. I got a little wider and a little more out of touch, but count your blessings, they always say, and just be grateful for one more day. This old life's been a winding road, there's some things I take with me when I go. I'm dreaming while I drive, I'm dreaming back to another time. We've all lived so many lives, I'm dreaming while I drive. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, here's a song. I wrote it with a friend of mine, David Gerard, who's from Scotland. And he came over from Scotland on his way to Nashville to be a country music songwriter. And he got as far as Knoxville and sort of got hung up there for a while. That's where I met him. Got stuck there in the Bermuda Triangle of the Appalachians, as I sometimes refer to Knoxville. And while he was there, we wrote a few songs. This is one of them. Let's send it out here, moving towards the holiday season, to some of the less fortunate folks that are out there. Keep them in mind. It's called For Only a Dollar. The sign around his neck said he was deaf and blind. Cardboard box on the sidewalk, best home that he could find. And
The Hoosiers, and I heard that Mike Pence is the sixth Hoosier vice president. So, what's a Hoosier?
Well, dear, a Hoosier is a person from Indiana. You're from Indiana, so you're a Hoosier.
But I get plausible deniability on that when I run for president.
Maybe, but the FBI will probably tell everyone about it just before your election, dear.
If I have to be a Hoosier, I want to know what it means. What does it mean, Mommy? Where does the word come from?
Well, dear, words come from the dictionary. Let's use our Fiddlin' Joe rotary dial reasonably intelligent phone to ask Sassy where it came from. She'll know.
Ask Sassy! Ask Sassy!
Okay.
Yeah?
I'd like to speak to Sassy, please.
To reach the Sassy app, dial 380-257-97, then press pound, star, and the hashtag sign, whatever it's called.
Cassie.
You again. What do you and your brat of a kid want this time?
Sassy, we were hoping you could help us find out where the word Hoosier comes from.
Piece of cake. Researching. Well, I'll be dit.
What is it, Sassy?
It seems that nobody really knows where that word Hoosier comes from. I'm going to connect you to Dear Krabby, and he might know.
He knows everything.
Okay, now here it goes. Stay on the phone, and whatever you do, do not press that star key.
You mean this one?
I told you not to press the star key. Now you've just destroyed London. I hope you're happy.
Sorry, Sassy.
I'm going to try it again. Just stay away from the phone for just a few seconds, kid.
Yeah? This is Dear Krabby. Advice for the forlorn. What kind of stupid problem are you calling with?
Oh, hi, Krabby. Actually, my problem is a bit unusual, and I'm not sure whether you can help me.
That's what they all say. But I say, if Krabby can't help, you're beyond help. So, what is this unusual problem of yours?
My little girl wants to know what the word Hoosier means.
Well, that's easy. It's someone from Indiana. You must be from Indiana. Only a Hoosier would be stupid enough to call me about that.
No, Krabby. We mean, where did the word come from?
Oh, well, that actually I don't know. I could put you in touch with Leona Lenoir. She's good at digging up information.
No, I don't think she can help. In fact, I'm sure of it. But thanks anyway, Krabby. I guess it will have to remain a mystery.
Well, thanks for making my day. I was supposed to go to London on vacation next week.
Well, dear, I guess we'll never know.
No, Mommy, I want to know. If you don't tell me now, I'll hold my breath till I turn blue. Tell me, Mommy. Tell me.
But, dear, I...
Don't be so pessimistic, Mommy.
Oh, it's you. You always startle me when you pop in like this. But what does this have to do with Fiddlin' Joe? I can't think of any product he has that has anything to do with Hoosiers.
Oh, Mommy, that hurts. I am cut to the quick. Fiddlin' Joe is about so much more than just selling products. He works constantly and tirelessly to make this world a better place. And that means helping mommies and their little girls.
That's all very nice, but what can he do for us now?
Well, here, Mommy. This is a present from Fiddlin' Joe. There will be no charge other than a small delivery fee that you'll barely notice when we take it out of your bank account.
What's this? A bottle of knee-high soda and a small package of peanuts? What do I do with them?
Well, the first thing is you open the knee-high and take a swig. Okay, now open the peanuts and pour them into the soda bottle. Okay, now put your thumb over the top of that bottle and shake her up. Okay, good. Now wait just a minute and...
Oh my! A genie in a bottle?
Oh, yes, mistress! You have fed me peanuts and shaken the sacred knee-high bottle and awakened me! My name is Ralph. I am the original Hoosier, and I'll be your guide today as we take a fun and fact-filled frolic through some frivolous frivolities of this state we favor. Do you have specific questions, or should I just give you the standard tour? I'm 200 years old this year, so the tour has been enhanced.
Well, we want to know where the word Hoosier comes from. Can you tell us that?
Oh, I can do better than tell you. I can show you. Just step into my time and space chariot and hold on tight, and we'll meet the original Hoosiers.
Hold my hand, dear. This might get a little dangerous.
Goody, goody, goody. Will there be dinosaurs?
This is Indiana, dear. There are always dinosaurs. Mostly in the state house.
And away we go!
Whoa! Look! Isn't that Abe Lincoln?
Yes, yes, he was once a resident of the Hoosier State. But, we've arrived. Now the people down there can't see or hear us, but this is radio, so it doesn't matter anyway. Hang on!
Oh, ow! Whoa!
Whoa, look at the horses.
Okay, folks, we have finally entered Indiana. I got a little time for a brief rest now before we get it to work. All right.
Well, how do you know we're in Indiana, George? I didn't see no signs. I did see a sign about fireworks, but there was some Burma Chief signs.
Hiram, now, didn't you notice how the trail changed back there a piece?
You mean where it got a hell of a lot bumpier and the ruts got deeper?
Yep, Bobby, that's what I was talking about. Any tracker knows that when the roads get bad, it's a sure sign you're in Indiana. Someday we'll sell that trail to a multinational corporation, and we'll all be better off for it, too. But now that we're here, we've got some important building to do.
You mean put up a schoolhouse so our childrens can get educated?
Well, sort of, Matilda, sort of.
No. The first thing we got to do is build us a gym.
A gym? What's a gym? We need a schoolhouse.
Hell, Samantha, everyone knows the first thing you do is build the damn gym, and then you build the damn schoolhouse. Priorities, damn it, priorities.
You swear too much, Bobby. And whatever in the world is a gym for?
Well, to play basketball in, woman. Don't you know nothing?
Isn't that the game where grown men dribble all over the floor and then throw up their shots?
No, that's a damn frat house. Come on, men. Get your tools ready and go out and cut down some trees. We got us a damn gym to build. Don't forget to put a lot of chairs in it. And you ladies, put on some short skirts and stand on the damn sidelines and cheer us on.
And why don't you cook us up something to eat? I got it. Listen, why don't you cook up some of that there pork and pound it out flat, and maybe you can dip it in some of them there pine needles and fry it up. Yes, sir, that'd be right tasty. Now, wouldn't it?
Ready, okay. He's the peaches, he's the cream, he's the coach of our team. Yay, Rock Bobby!
Well, okay, folks, it's a done. What do you think?
Well, I think those sandwiches would be better if we used breadcrumbs instead of pine needles.
Oh, yeah, well, that's probably a good idea. Tell you what, we could call them tenderloins, and they could be the Indiana state food.
Indiana could be known far and wide for its hoot cuisine.
Yeah, and the food's pretty good, too. Hey, Bobby, how's that gym look?
Well, let me try her out. How many times do I have to tell you the damn gym floor needs to be smooth? I just punctured our best ball trying to bounce it off this floor.
Well, we'll take care of that, Bobby, but right now we got a bigger problem.
What's that?
Well, what are we going to call the team? It's got to have a name, you know.
Well, how about the Buffaloes? There's a lot of buffalo around here.
Not anymore. I got them all.
Sarah Palin.
That's right. You betcha. I never get buffaloed. Pew, pew, pew.
No, I don't see no deer either. I tell you what, maybe we ought to build some suburbs so they can breed.
Then we can team up and call them the Indiana Bucks.
Rack them up, Bucks!
No, Bucks is a stupid name. Let's name them after my favorite drink.
You mean the Indiana Light Beers?
No. I mean the Indiana Boilermakers.
Boilermakers is a stupid name, too, damn it. Can't you do better?
Hey, I know. I got it. I know.
What? Dang it, tell us. Jeez.
We can call them the Indiana Hoosiers.
Go Hoosiers!
Yeah.
Well, just a cotton picking minute. What in the name of all that's holy is a Hoosier? I never heard such a thing.
Well, that's why it's such a perfect name. Nobody knows what it means, and nobody will ever know what it means, because it don't mean nothing.
Hey, so it'll be like politics in Indiana then, completely meaningless.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it. I can see the headlines now. Bobby Day and his Hoosiers win again. That's got some damn class.
And we don't even have to make a costume for a mascot if nobody knows what it's supposed to look like anyhow. Well, that's a slam dunk, George.
It'd make a great title for a movie, too.
And we can make up a bunch of silly stories about what it means just to keep people guessing.
You mean like a bartender finding an ear on the floor of his bar after night fight and then holding it up and saying, "Who's here?"
Or that the word comes from a bunch of French riverboat trappers working for a man named Hoosier.
Or that it came from elite soldiers called hussars.
Oh, well, yeah, them hussars. Yeah, didn't they wear them red candy striped pants on them?
Yeah,
well, you see, it's a perfect name. It'll define all the Indiana culture from this day forward. Imagine the arguments people have about the meaning of Hoosier values.
Yeah. All right. All those in favor of Hoosiers, say yup.
Yup.
All right. It's official. From this day forward, Williams is all Hoosiers.
And that's how the word Hoosiers came about.
That was so educational. Are you satisfied now, dear?
Oh, yes, Mommy. Now that I know that Hoosiers don't exist, it doesn't bother me to be one.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sarah Flint.
There's a red bird sitting on a high line pole, sun coming over the tree. John Deere banging out a dusty roll over the back road, summer breeze. It's mid-July and the corn is high, how hot and dry it's been. Indiana, Indiana, going back to Indiana again. Indiana, Indiana, back to my Indiana again. There's a catfish swimming in a creek that winds over black dirt bottom land. Got one more barbed wire fence to climb, and he's as good as in my frying pan. It's a barefoot child running wild. I've changed my style since then. Indiana, Indiana, going back to Indiana again. Indiana, Indiana, back to my Indiana again. Freight train whistling under the moon, hoot owl on the eve. Crickets join in and pretty soon you've got an all-night symphony. Before you know, the rooster crows and a new day slow begins. Indiana, Indiana, going back to Indiana again. Indiana, Indiana, back to my Indiana again.
Bill Belson.
Oh, drat. It's the fuzz.
Excuse me, ma'am. Do you have any idea how fast you were going?
Well, officer, I don't. My eyes are so bad, I can't read the speedometer on my car.
Oh, really?
Well, I can't even barely see the traffic. I guess I really need to get that cataract surgery the doctor wants me to have.
That's a good idea, ma'am. May I see your license, please?
Oh, no, officer, I'm afraid not.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, my license was revoked a few months ago after my third DUI conviction.
I see. Well, could I see the registration for the vehicle, please?
Oh, that's not possible either.
Not possible. Why is that?
Well, to tell you the truth, I stole this car this morning, and I don't have the registration for it.
And who did you steal it from?
Well, I don't know his name. I had to bash him over the head to get the car.
What?
I must have hit him a little too hard, so I put his body in the trunk. And I suppose there might be an identification on it if you really need to know. And I only took the cash when I went through his pockets.
Oh, no. Yeah. Ma'am,
yeah. Okay.
Please stay in the vehicle.
Okay.
I have to make a call. Uh-huh. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Dispatch, this is Adam 112. Send back up to the corner of 4th and Walnut. I have a homicide and a crazy old lady. Check that. There's a whole auditorium of crazy people. They must be crazy. They're laughing. Send Sergeant O'Leary, too. This is more than I can handle.
Affirmative, 1 Adam 12. Backup is on the way.
Okay, Billy, me lad. What have we here, then?
Oh, Sarge, I am glad you're here. There's this old lady, and there's this man.
Well, all right. It's good you called for me. I'll handle it from here. Yeah. Top of the evening to you, ma'am. Would you be so kind as to pop your trunk open for me?
Why, certainly, officer. Go.
What have we got back there, Johnny?
Well, there's I've got a spare tire and a jack, Sarge. Don't see nothing else, though.
I see. Ma'am, The arresting officer said you claim to have a body in the trunk. Now, what can you tell me about that?
A body? How silly can you get? I wonder where he got that idea.
Now, well then, could you show me your license and registration, please?
Well, yes, certainly, officer. And here, out of my purse, here you go.
This all appears to be in order.
I should hope so. I just got my license renewed, and I passed the test with flying colors. I've never had a single ticket, and my vision was perfect.
Yeah, but the officer said you told him that you couldn't see, that your license had been revoked for drunk driving, and you had no registration because this is a stolen car.
He said that? Where could he have possibly gotten all those ideas? Why, I bet that little weasel said I was speeding, too.
Okay, we're going to slow it down a little bit here. Friends, we're in that awkward time of the year where there's still some leftover turkey in the fridge. And it's just about time to start thinking about Christmas presents. Well, our sound effects man, the esteemed Tony Brewer, has been trying to rethink his approach to the season. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about that. First, Tony decided he would not make the mistake he'd made last year.
No.
When he forgot to thaw the turkey. and had to put it in the oven frozen solid. Needless to say, he burned the turkey. But he was fortunate that the fire department arrived in time to save his house. This year, Tony decided to hunt down his own turkey. He practiced with a shotgun. Then he escalated to a bazooka. And then to an RPG. But he wasn't satisfied with the results of any of that, so he tried to learn how to use a bow and arrow. Thwang! Fortunately, his neighbor's dog will recover. He tried knife throwing, but that didn't work too well either. But again, his neighbor's cat didn't need that tail anyway. Finally, he decided on using some old guitar strings to garrot the bird, or garrot. But he needed a turkey call to make this happen, so he went out into the woods and selected an appropriate tree, chopped it down.
Now this looks good. Don't chop. Hi-ya!
And then cut it into sections with his chainsaw. Fortunately, his neighbor's pot-belly pig only lost one ear. He whittled down the piece of wood he selected from his tree and checked on Google for instructions on how to make a turkey call. The first time he blew that call, though, it sounded more like an emu.
Moo.
So he tried again. He was able to duplicate the sound of a number of animals.
Meow.
A raptor.
Auk.
An alligator.
Splash.
No, that I'm sorry, that was a crocodile, not an alligator.
Sploosh.
A hummingbird. A French poodle.
Le woof.
A wiener dog. And spectacularly, a grizzly bear. A grizzly bear in heat.
Hey-o.
Finally, he got to the point of doing the call of a turkey in distress.
Oh, help me!
Satisfied, he got up at the crack of dawn, went out to the woods to find his very own Thanksgiving turkey. He blew on that turkey call, and in no time, he was surrounded by a whole flock of concerned turkeys. Tony was ready to pounce before he noticed that he had left the guitar string at home.
Twang.
Then he heard the sound of a helicopter. And before he knew it, a machine gun had opened up on the turkeys. As the helicopter flew off, he heard that familiar voice. Sarah Palin, gloating on her over her victory.
Gloat, gloat, gloat.
Then a turkey came from behind a bush, and Tony immediately jumped it, determined to bring it down with his bare hands. The turkey turned out to be a martial arts expert. And teenage ninja turkey it was, and got in a bunch of kicks,
and a few
wing jabs, and the two of those they fought frantically for nearly an hour. Finally,
tick tock.
They both got up, staggered arm to arm to the nearest bar. Where they shared a bottle of wild turkey. The turkey went home with Tony, and the two of them went out to shop early on Black Friday when the turkey was killed in a stampede of shoppers. Tony hasn't been the same since. Mr. Tony Brewer, ladies and gentlemen. And now put your hands together for Ross Martini, Eiler, and the Firehouse Rounders, who are going back to Indiana.
I'm going back to Indiana, back to where I started from. I'm going back to Indiana, Indiana, here I come. I spent my weekend green to pastures. I didn't find what I was after. And now I got the blues, that's why I sing. Just wanna do my thing. I'm going back to Indiana, back to where I started from. I'm going back to Indiana, Indiana, here I come. Come on, guitar.
Down Lincoln, trying to find parking. What are you thinking? Got David Baker, Mellencamp 2, Hoagie and Bix, it's all true. Bloomington North, Bloomington South, all you rest, shut your mouth. Don't you forget Raintree County, whether you're a student or whether you're a townie. Bloomington United, justice for all for the glory of old IU.
I'm going back to Indiana.
It's 5:03, and you're listening to the Firehouse Follies on WFHB Community Radio at 91.3 FM and 98.1 FM. Let's check back with Ralph, the original Hoosier, for more fun-filled information about Indiana.
Now, of course, those early Hoosiers didn't just stop with their unrelenting and highly successful efforts to perfect the game of basketball.
What else do they have to do, G.D. Ralph?
Oh, there were many things. One of the most important was to determine what crops they wanted to grow.
But that was just corn and soybeans, right? What was there to decide?
Ah, but it took a while to come to that conclusion, Mommy. For example, they wasted a couple of years trying to establish a market for Jerusalem artichokes. Now, Jerusalem artichokes are easy to grow and can be harvested in abundance. But they have a major drawback that made them unreliable as a cash crop.
George, I think we need to give up on those Jerusalem artichokes.
Well, what makes you say that, woman? They're so easy to grow, we got lots of time to practice our basketball.
Oh, but doesn't the smell bother you?
Smell? What smell?
George, haven't you noticed that those things cause flatulence?
Yeah, and they make you fart a damn lot, too.
Oh, maybe that's why them out-of-state basketball teams don't want to play us all the time.
Kentucky. Well, they're right, George. We should give up on Jerusalem artichokes, and I've got the perfect crop to take their place.
What's that, Hiram?
Arugula.
Arugula?
Yeah, that's right, Bobby. Arugula. It's got vitamins and minerals and omega-3 fatty acids, and it's gluten-free. It also has appeal to food snobs.
Oh, now, Hiram, you know a food snob in Indiana is a guy who puts his peanuts in Coca-Cola instead of knee-high soda. We need to find something that your common, everyday garden variety Hoosier is going to like. Something with the mark of the people on it.
Well, that's the corniest ideal I ever heard.
Hey, that's it. Corn. We can plant corn. Indiana will soon be known far and wide for its corn crop. There'll be corn everywhere, even on the radio. Why, someday a highly beloved and not very good-looking colonel will spring from the well-fertilized cornfields of Indiana and tell our story to the world. Of course, most people won't believe him, and he'll wind up just being a footnote in the history of civilization here in Indiana.
Well, that'll be about the shortest book ever written.
Oh, let's get back to corn. People can eat it. Animals can eat it. Okay. It's perfect for high-fructose corn syrup, and we could sell it as a fuel additive.
Not to mention good old corn liquor. Can't have shine without damp corn.
By golly, George, you've done it again. Another great idea. But I think we'll need at least one other cash crop just to be on the safe side. You know, there's still room for arugula.
Hiram, can't you get it through your dang head that folks ain't gonna be eating arugula? We need a crop we can sell to the big food distributors.
I wonder if you could grind up arugula and use it to make some damn spaghetti sauce.
No, I tell you what, I'm thinking maybe beans of some kind or other. Beans.
Not lima beans. I hate lima beans.
No, that's over in Ohio. I'm thinking something like maybe soybeans.
What soybeans?
Well, they're,
Yes?
Soybeans is, they're, yes? Well, you know, I don't have the faintest idea.
Oh.
I just like the way the name sounds.
Well, it's settled then. Corn and soybeans. We're all going to be rich.
Well, but not regular corn only. My friend Orville says he needs something he calls popcorn for this new snack food he's trying to develop. So maybe we could grow that, too.
Well, all right, we'll give her a shot, but I doubt if it'll ever really catch on.
And today, Indiana grows 90% of the country's popcorn.
Here's Jason Fickle to tell us something about sin in Indiana.
All right, thank you so very much. This song, thank you very much. Thanks for coming out today. This song is written by a guy named Scott Miller, and Colonel Kelsey hipped me to him. I really enjoy his music. Turns out I have a first cousin named Scott Miller as well, and so when you see my cousin, it's not this songwriter. But so how many people have a first cousin name a Scott? Okay, for those of you at home, there's like 17 people have raised their hands. Okay, how many people have a first cousin last name Miller? Okay, for those of you at home, 7. Yep, I see some hands in the back there. Excellent. Wow. Any other Scott Millers in the room tonight? Wow, 3 or 4 back row. Unbelievable coincidence. So this is called Sin in Indiana. Henry Streeter owns this town. He parks in the sidewalk and he beats men down. His wife was pictured in a magazine. He brought her over from the Philippines. You can see about 5 o'clock lying on his car on a town sidewalk. It starts in Minnesota as a tiny stream, rolls down the river down to New Orleans. Sin in Indiana, it's a powerful thing. Chalmers Walcott, he's the biggest liar. Drinks bottled water, but his breath is like fire. Got half a finger, but he's twice as mean as a boilermaker on amphetamines. Now he's the deacon down at the church, but there's porn in the corn, so there's plenty of work. Starts in Minnesota as a tiny stream, rolls down the river like to New Orleans. It's sin in Indiana, it's a powerful thing. Magnolia Hempstead, well, she couldn't stop eating popcorn while she's high on pot. Kept on a chewing till her teeth were gone, but the dentist replaces them with cut limestone. You can tell when she's been around, 'cause there's tombstones growing where she spit on the ground. Well, starts in Minnesota as a tiny stream, rolls down to New Orleans. Sin in Indiana, it's a powerful thing. Sin in Indiana, ooh, it's a powerful thing. I said, sin in Indiana, it's a powerful thing. Oh, thank you very much.
Friends, many of you are in denial about this, but there are only 21 more shopping days till Christmas, and if you don't get out there and buy something pretty darn quick, you'll just be another loser to your loved ones.
But the good stuff is already gone. How do we get a tasteful present for Uncle Charlie that won't cost an arm and a leg and wasn't made in some foreign country where they don't even like us?
Not a problem, Mommy. Just give him the gift of music.
Music?
That's right, the gift of music. Now, and for a limited time only, you can buy Fiddlin' Joe's wonderful new release, The Little Drummer Boy, Part 2, The Jam Sessions.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really care for the song much. What's it sound like?
Oh, I am so glad you asked. Take it away, Maestro!
Jam, they told me, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. It's in the stable, dude, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. We hope you will come to pa-rum-pa-pum-pum and bring your drum with you, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. So come jam with us, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, and bring your drum. The bass, it will be there, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, to complement the snare, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, to make the whole joint sing, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. And now the keyboard rings, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. The drum. Let's add a now guitar, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. It sounds good in a bar, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. I played my drum so loud, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. 'Cause I was really proud, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. And they all jammed with me, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, me and my drum.
Why, that sounds really good.
Well, that's the Little Drummer Boy Part 2, the Jam Sessions. Not available in stores, not available on the internet. Order it today for your loved ones.
For your loved ones.
Thanks to Sarah Flint and the Rum Pum Pum Chorus, ladies and gentlemen. And now, I am honored to be able to introduce...
Oh, Dan, wait
what?
A minute.
Wait, what is it, Richard? Can't you see I'm getting ready to introduce Scott Russell Sanders?
Well, yeah, that's just the problem, okay. Dan. Yeah. We went to round him up to get him on stage, and we discovered him trying to sneak out the back door.
Oh, not again.
Disguised as Jar Turner.
So what's the problem here?
Well, it seems that Scott noticed one or two minor factual errors.
One or two?
In the history we've been presenting. Said he didn't want to associate himself with people who will stoop as low as our writers are prepared to go.
Now, what does he think he is, an IU professor or something?
Oh, yeah, actually, yes, he is an IU professor. A distinguished professor emeritus at that. Fortunately, we were able to get him to change his mind. He'll appear as long as we read this statement.
Well, read it and let's get this show on the road.
Okay, here goes. I, Scott Russell Sanders, wish it to be known that I had nothing to do with the writing of this show. I appear only in the hope that by doing so, I might give it a tiny amount of class and historic veracity it would otherwise not have. This I will do by reading you a story that reflects a true event from the history of Indiana. End of statement. So, Professor, surely this meets with your approval?
My name is not Shirley. You need to get some new writers. You keep calling me Shirley.
I'm sorry. It's in our contract. Unlimited use of the Shirley joke every time.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Scott Russell Sanders.
Thank you. A true recent event from Indiana history. Visitors from the metropolis were often surprised to learn that indoor toilets had been adopted throughout the Midwest, even in the hills of southern Indiana, where a man named Gordon Milk lived with the other 8 members of his household. Septic systems were the rule in the countryside and sewers in the cities. Old-timers didn't miss having to visit the privy in the dark of night, especially in the dead of winter, but they did miss hearing owls and seeing stars. Sitting on the pot indoors, they had nothing to hear but the body's ruckus or the house's wooden groans and nothing to see but wallpaper or cracked plaster. Even if modern plumbing marked an improvement over outhouses in other respects, it did have drawbacks, the chief one being that subterranean pipes offered ideal habitat for alligators. How the first alligators had reached Gordon Milk's hometown was a matter of debate in his household. The grandparents believed the beasts must have stowed away in Hoosier automobiles returning from Florida vacations. The two Milk boys, who loved to swim, imagined the alligators might have paddled upstream from the Gulf of Mexico. The two girls suggested they might have been sold in pet stores, mislabeled as lizards. Gordon was partial to a theory he had heard on the radio, that source of all veracity, which claimed that sandhill cranes had carried alligator eggs for snacks on their northward migration and accidentally dropped a few in a sewage lagoon. Mabel Milk, Gordon's wife, declared herself agnostic on the subject. She didn't care how alligators had begun breeding in the sewers. She wanted them eliminated so a person could sit on a toilet without fearing attack from a toothy green snout. Workers at the sewage treatment plant offered eyewitness accounts of the alligators, as well as photographs, which appeared on the front page of the local newspaper, accompanied by grim headlines. One read, "Fanged monsters under our feet." Another read, "Cruel killers prowl pipes." The police borrowed heavy weaponry and bulletproof vests from the Indiana National Guard. A local preacher identified the beast as a cross between Leviathan and Behemoth, sure signs of the apocalypse as foretold in the book of Revelations. The Chamber of Commerce offered a bounty for alligator hides, but no one dared collect. Stores advertised gator guns in designer colors, sure to match any bathroom decor. Street vendors peddled cans of pepper spray guaranteed to fend off reptilian attacks. Folks old enough to remember country ways recommended wearing necklaces of garlic or buckeyes, talismans known to ward off evil. None of these developments reassured Mabel Milk. No matter how many times Gordon explained that an alligator larger than a salamander could not slither through the maze of plumbing into a toilet bowl, she was not appeased. Never shy about expressing her views, she confronted the mayor one Saturday morning at the farmer's market, demanding that he do something about the plague of reptiles. The mayor didn't want to lose his place in line at the booth with the best sweet corn, so he stood there while Mabel gave him an earful about rabies, tetanus, sleeping sickness, and other disorders brought about from the dangers posed by alligators. As a crowd gathered, echoing her worries, the mayor vowed to address the problem first thing on Monday. What he did on Monday was to call the public works manager, who called the maintenance foreman, who called Gordon Milk, who was scheduled to drive his street sweeper on the graveyard shift. "Change of plan," the foreman told Gordon over the phone. "Now you're going to clear the alligators out of the sewers."
"How am I supposed to do that?" Gordon asked.
"However you want, Milk, just so they're gone by next weekend."
"Why next weekend?"
"Because the mayor wants to shop for corn at the farmer's market without getting hassled by your wife." As Gordon left for work that evening, he didn't mention his new assignment to Mabel, who tended to worry. He drove slowly to the maintenance garage so he could lay out his plan of attack. Everyone else on the midnight shift was ordered to give him whatever help he needed, but otherwise to leave him alone. Wearing a look of supreme concentration, Gordon walked straight into the machine shop and closed the door. The rest of that night, he opened the door only to ask for a tool or a part or a piece of scrap. Otherwise, all that emanated from the shop were sounds: the whir of a saw, the pop of a riveting gun, the sizzle of a welding torch. At the end of the shift, out he came, posted a "Do Not Disturb" sign, and slouched away, lugging his lunchbox and gazing ahead like a man who had seen a vision. Tuesday night was the same, and Wednesday night as well. At the beginning of graveyard shift on Thursday, the foreman intercepted Gordon and demanded to know why he hadn't even set foot inside the sewer. "While you're tinkering, Milk," the foreman said, "alligators are terrorizing the city." Eyes ablaze, Gordon merely waved him aside and asked for a carton of green spray paint. The paint was delivered, along with warnings from the foreman that only one day remained before the weekend. Gordon answered with a loud banging. As the sun rose on Friday, the shop door sprang open and out rolled a green monster that sent all but the most observant of the maintenance workers running for their pickups and jalopies. The observant ones, including the foreman, noticed that the monster had headlights for eyes, tailpipes for nostrils, hubcaps for scales, and a propeller at the tip of its tail. It was shaped like a giant snake on wheels, flexibly jointed, heavily armored, and varnished to a high sheen, no doubt to make it waterproof. From behind a window in the forehead of the beast peered the grinning face of Gordon Milk. "If this works, you're in for a raise," the foreman shouted. "If it flops, you're in for trouble." The jaws opened, revealing teeth made of knife blades, and from a loudspeaker in the throat came Gordon's growl. "There's only one way to find out. Have a showdown." The foreman himself hauled Gordon and his contraption to the treatment plant and lowered him with a crane into the murk of the sewage lagoon. Within minutes, a mid-sized alligator swam up, took one look at the green monster, and fled with a great thrashing of its tail. A second alligator did the same, then a third and a fourth, each one larger than the one before. Finally, the biggest and fiercest of the whole tribe showed up, glared at this intruder, and charged at Gordon's machine with jaws agape. Suddenly the headlights flashed, the loudspeaker roared, and out of the nostrils poured a cloud of crankcase oil, which blinded the alligator just long enough for the green monster to ram him in the ribs, bite him on the rump, and flip him high in the air. As soon as the great beast hit the water, he struck out for shore, climbed onto the bank, and high-tailed it for the nearest creek. A throng of alligators followed him, scrambling as fast as they could go, and off they fled downstream from Geode Creek into the White River, then along the Wabash, the Ohio, and the Mississippi, slowing down only when they reached the bayous of Louisiana. From the swamps, rumors of their narrow escape spread along the Gulf Coast, and with each retelling, the green monster grew more terrible. Since that time, no alligator has troubled Gordon's hometown or any other place in Indiana, so far as we've heard. One true piece of Indiana history.
Now here's a word from Fiddlin' Joe Enterprises.
Mommy, I want a new television. One with a humongous screen.
But dear, we can't afford a new TV. I just got you that neoliberal pantsuit. What more do you want?
A big honking TV. I want. If you don't get me one, I'm going to take off all my clothes and stand in the middle of the street and scream until I pass out.
But televisions cost money, dear. Mommy's job is sending out emails telling people they have a fortune waiting for them in a Nigerian bank account. And believe me, the pay is rotten.
Then get a better job and buy me a TV.
Oh, if only I'd gotten my college degree instead of going to all those parties and spending so much time playing beer pong. Maybe then I could get a better job.
So you're up against it again, Mom, Mommy?
You again. Someday you have to tell me how you do that radio trick thing. What can you do to help this time? The truth is, I don't have a college degree, so I can't get a better job. Is Fiddlin' Joe hiring?
Well, not for the high-paying jobs, no. You'll need a college degree for that.
See, what can I do?
Well, Fiddlin' Joe hears your pain, and he sees your complaint. Mommy, he's opening up his own college just to help people like you.
Fiddlin' Joe has a college?
Why not? Hundreds of people have expressed an interest in becoming as successful a businessman as he is. So he thought, why not share his knowledge and good fortune? For a minimal tuition fee, of course, he's pleased to announce that he has purchased one of several empty student apartment buildings in Bloomington to serve as the campus of Joe University.
Joe University?
That's right, Mommy. Joe Yu will teach classes on how to be a success in the world of business, including such vital skills as filing bankruptcies and filing lawsuits. And he'll teach a special course crammed full of proven methods to follow to avoid paying your debts and your taxes.
Well, that does sound good, I must admit. But wait a minute here. Is this school certified?
Oh, how could you even think of asking a question like that? Joe Yu is fully certified by the internationally prestigious FJ Board of Certification. A degree from Joe Yu is your passport to a better job and a step up in our economy. And the best thing is, you don't have to pay until you get a better job. Or 6 days after you graduate, whichever comes first.
My, this is sounding better and better.
Can we get a new TV then, Mommy?
We sure can, dear. And we'll get the manufacturer to pay for it. Just as soon as I graduate from Joe U. And I'll get you a Joe U t-shirt, too.
Well, surprisingly, I just happen to have an application right here. It's already filled out. Just sign at the bottom, and you're back in school.
Well, hand it over, then. There. I'm going back to school, thanks to Fiddlin' Joe.
I love you, Mommy. And I love Fiddle Joe, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Firehouse Rounders.
Well, Jasper sent me down with a dollar and a dime. He says there's things I've been needing, boy, and now is the time. He said, when you buy the grits, why don't you put them in an envelope? 'Cause I got a new way of burning, a man that's called a rope-a-dope. Now, rope-a-dope's grits taste just like caviar. And Jasper says soon you'll be licking them from the jar. Jasper don't let it all go to his head. He said, oh, don't forget the milk and bread. Now Jasper said to Jojo, your nose is always in that book. But all Jojo had for Jasper was a very disparaging look. 'Cause Jojo pours over that Bible like a racing form. Handicapping ponies from before you were born. And you know the trifecta that Jojo plays the most? It's Mary and Martha and the Holy Ghost. And the Savior's words are spelled out in red. It says, love thy neighbor, but don't forget the milk and bread. Now Jojo listens to Junior everywhere she goes. 'Cause Junior's got his very own radio show. But the station keeps on fading in and out. Ever since that FCC license been in doubt. And Junior's working hard, just trying to make amends. Since the sister badmouthed the mayor and his friends. And the mayor's lackey took down every word she said. But all he could make out was, don't forget the milk and bread. Don't forget it on the base, on the base. Now the mayor says that Jezebel's the fairest of them all. And he has a picture up down at City Hall. But Jezebel's own mirror just keeps on breaking up. 'Cause she hauls it around in the back of a pickup truck. And folks just love to watch that glass bust over the side. Don't tell Jez to slow down, we already tried. Jezebel don't like people staring in her bed. She says, oh, mind your own milk and bread. Mind it a while, mind it on the drums. Jezebel says to Johnny, you can do what you like, as long as you're out of the house on Saturday night. So Johnny goes down to that 7-come-11. 'Cause it's an ice cream sandwich and a stick-up heaven. The night clerk keeps only 20 in the drawer. Take it up with that day manager if you want any more. So Johnny bought it all with a president long dead. And then the night clerk said, and then the night clerk said, don't forget the milk and bread. Don't forget the milk and bread. Don't forget the milk and bread.
Get back to our original Hoosiers.
Those early Hoosiers were such visionaries. I wonder what happened.
Well, everything fell apart after Eugene Debs died.
Tell us more stories, Genie Ralph. More stories.
Well, of course. You see, the early Hoosiers had a memorable meeting with an itinerant seed peddler.
Hey, buddy. Who are you? Can you hit a damn three-point shot?
What? I never took a three-point shot. I'm Johnny Bradford Pearseed. I travel throughout the land planting Bradford pears to bring beauty into people's lives.
Ah, good three-point shot's enough damn beauty for me.
What are Bradford pears, for crying out loud?
Trust me, ma'am. They're going to be big someday. Every subdivision in the state's going to want their own row of Bradford pears to beautify what would otherwise be a bunch of drab-looking houses.
Well, that sounds very nice, but don't you think you should plant seeds of things with more value to the average person?
Such as what, for instance?
Well, how about mulberries? I mean, you could be Johnny Mulberry Seed, and your legacy'd go down in history.
No, I never cared much for mulberries, no. But you may be right about changing what I'm doing. Let's see now. Maybe peaches. No. Figs? No, that didn't work either.
Hey, I got an idea for you. What about apples?
Apples? That might work. Johnny Appleseed does have a nice ring to it. Well, it's time for me to go. I'll see y'all later. Tell the writers not to let their jokes get too corny.
Oh, yeah, that'll be the day. Oh, yeah.
And as you can see, Johnny got right to the core of the matter.
More stories! More stories!
Okay. Well, maybe I have one more I can tell you.
Tell us.
Well, little girl, those early Hoosiers very quickly developed a taste for catfish. And one day, a major calamity befell them.
What's a calamity?
That's when things go to hell in a handbasket, dear. Kind of like when your father shows up.
If you could just let me go on.
George, we got us a serious problem.
Oh, Hiram, you're always causing serious problems.
Like the time you tried to boil that popcorn for dinner and I broke my last 3 teeth on that.
Well, that was just a minor mistake. This time it's real serious.
Well, now go ahead and tell us about it there, Hiram.
Yeah, what happened? Did you lose another basketball, damn it?
No, but what happened was I went to throw the fish food in the catfish pond, you know, but instead of fish food, I wound up throwing in about 50 pounds of salt.
Oh, heavens, Hiram, we got plenty of salt. That's no problem.
Well, I don't think you understand. All the catfish shrunk up, and now they're all tiny, and they turned orange, see? Here's one.
Wow, that really is small. Looks pretty, though.
Well, how can we cook them little burgers up when they're so tiny?
Even have any knives small enough to fillet them. We're going to be ruined.
Hey, now don't worry about it, folks. I got it figured out. Things are going to be fine.
Well, how can you say that?
You got another idea, George?
I sure do. Listen, I figure we can sell these little buggers to some folks I know over to Martinsville.
Oh, come on. Not even folks from Martinsville be dumb enough to buy catfish this tiny.
Well, yeah, I know, but look, we won't call them catfish. We'll call them goldfish. We can tell them they can sell them as pets.
Great idea, George. We'll make money on the damn deal, and they'll be stuck with all these fish. No one in their right mind would buy a damn fish for a pet.
Well, I might. I'd call her Wanda.
Oh, George, you've always got such good ideas, my love.
So they sold the goldfish to some folks in Martinsville. And the folks in Martinsville became the first people in the country to sell goldfish. They made a lot of money doing that. And the original Hoosiers never did succeed in making a knife small enough to fillet them.
Thank you, Jeannie Ralph, for all this great information. What do you think of Indiana now, dear?
Mommy, I'm proud to be a Hoosier.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Mr. R.B. Morris.
Thank you. I want to send out a little song I made up some years ago when I was working up in the mountains of East Tennessee. They've been having some problems down there lately. Drought, and a lot of forest fires, a lot of smoke. A lot of folks have been burned out. It's been kind of tough for them. I want to send this out to them. It's called A Winter's Tale. It was Christmas in Newport City. There was ice on the Jefferson Highway. Thanksgiving had come and gone with the sun. Now snow fell down for the holiday. We sat down at Rubel's for whiskey and to share what there might be of company. The wind through the door blew the rugs on the floor, and an old man laughed as he shook off his hat in the doorway. And the snow is swirling round, and the world is upside down. Hey boys, we're getting in deep while the world is a station on the old road was open. Should a traveler happen to get over that old mountain pass, would be just like glass up high where the starlight is frozen. And the man on the inside was friendly. We talked for a while over coffee. He said it's too far to hike, there'll be no rides tonight, so why not stay on at least until dawn. But I'd made up my mind and I knew it was time. I'd done all my talking, I set out a-walking. I got people way up in who would see me again. And I can be there by morning, and it's where I was born, on a night just as white and dreamy. And the snow is swirling round, and the world is upside down. Hey boys, we're getting in deep while the world is thank you. Thank you very much. Let me see if I'll try one for you here. I wrote it a few years back there, but it's suddenly becoming perhaps a little more relevant here lately. And I was lucky to have John Prine cover this song. That's an honor for any songwriter. Yeah. And Marianne Faithfull did too. Now, if you got any old Marianne Faithfull song. He caught a train from Alexandria, just a broken man in flight, running scared with all his devils.
prayers all through the night. Oh, but mercy can't find him in the shadows where he called, forsaken all his better angels. That's how every empire falls. Sunday morning, like echoes from another time, and all our innocence and yearning, sense of wonder left behind. Oh, gentle hearts, remember, what was that story? Is it lost? Religion loses vision. That's how every empire falls. He toasts his wife and all his family, the providence he brought to bear. They raise their glasses in his honor, although this union they don't share. A man who lives among them, still a stranger to them all. For when the heart is never open, that's how every empire falls. Lock the door and board the window, and put the people in the street. It's just my job, he says, I'm sorry, and draws a check and goes home to eat. But at night he tells his woman, I know I hide behind the law. She says, you're only taking orders. That's how every empire falls.
Singing one I made up when I was over in Ireland just a couple of years ago. I was over there running with the gypsies. I can't live like that anymore, but I got a song out of it, and here's to them. I left my home in Ballyfair. I wandered far on old John's mare. I looked for work in every town and square. I left my home in Ballyfair. A tinker's trade, a gypsy's life. I'm in the gate, I hone the knife. I help the farmer and the farmer's wife. Hey, tinker's trade, hey, gypsy's life. Of highwaymen and rogues and thieves, I say no more, I'll run with these. For I had my fill, and I take my leave of highwaymen and rogues and thieves. All roads in time lead to the sea. A fisherman or sailor be, or a weary traveler bound far away. All roads in time lead to the sea of drink and drug and lust and greed. I ran the course, I ate the feast, from those who have the most to them that's least. Of drink and drug and lust and greed. In the beginning was the earth. We planted seed down in the dirt. We said our prayers and we did the work. And in the end, returned to earth.
That's our show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Ivy Tech Community College for underwriting this show, and to J. Lynn Designs and Fine Print for further support. Thanks also to Nick's English Hut, Mother Bears, and the Best Taste Chinese Restaurant for keeping us fed. Thanks to Sarah Flint and Maurice Murphy. The Firehouse Rounders were Jason Fickle on guitar, Carolyn Dutton on fiddle, Ross Martini Eiler on piano, and Dan Deckard on drums, with Ron Kadish on bass. The Unusual Suspects were Mark Blackwell, Richard Fish, Betty Greenwell, Mike Leonard, Brandy Roberts, Brian Roberts, and Becky Staff. Tony Brewer provided sound effects. That's right. House sound was by Jim Lang. Radio sign by Jeffrey Sundog Morris. Our technical crew was Marion Connedy, Dan Withard, Ilza Ackerbergs, and Cheryl Mitchell. And studio engineer Sarah Hetrick. Today's show was written by Mr. Stuffitupagus and the residents of the Occupy Sesame Street home for Over the Hill Riders. Stage manager was Dan G-Man Salvaggi, and our director was Richard Fish. The show was produced by Mike Kelsey. Our theme song is Firehouse Blues, written by Jason Fickle. For WFHB, I'm Dan Salvaggi, reminding you to save the date of March 5th for the next